Welcome to the December 20th, 2013 Jubilize Me podcast.
Jubilize me.
Yeah, so welcome to what's going to be the last podcast of 2013. We made it to December, folks. And yeah, it's Christmas next week, so if you need to buy presents, you better get on that. I am Addison Berry, your hostess for today's podcast, and I have with me today a special non-Drupal guest, Drew McClellan, who is the director and senior web developer at edgeofmyseat.com. who are the makers of the Perch CMS, which we'll hear a little bit about in this podcast. But the main topic of this podcast is actually Drew's project 24 Ways, which is an advent calendar for web geeks. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that is and why that came to be. So before we dive into that mystery topic, a little bit of news. So, for our video stuff, we've just launched the new PSD to Theme series with Emma Westby. So that's pretty cool. Like, someone gives you a PSD file, you need to get it into a Drupal theme. There's a whole series. It'll go through the rest of December and through most of January before we get all that out. A couple of weeks ago, Dries did a post on sort of the current status of Drupal 8 stuff, and that the next step is a beta launch, and sort of what's required for us to get to that step. And he talks a little bit about the fact that the upgrade path is not a blocker for a full release of Drupal 8 because of the way we're going to approach the upgrade path this time. So that's worth a read if you haven't been paying attention and you kind of want to know what's going on in terms of where's Drupal, when's it going to release. And I should also mention that there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get it to beta. So start figuring out what's going on and help it get there. If you're waiting for it, don't expect other people to just make your food for you. And I'd say here at Drupalize Me, we've actually just started a new program where everybody on the Drupalize Me team needs to spend at least 5 hours a week working on Drupal 8. So I hope other people out there join us in that commitment. I'll blog about that a bit more, probably. And then last thing I wanted to mention, just sort of in general news, is next week is Christmas around the world, and Lullabot is closed on Tuesday the 24th and Wednesday the 25th. And I just mentioned that because nobody will be in the office, but we will still be checking in on support for Drupalize Me. So if you do have some support problems or questions, go ahead and submit them, and we will get to them, but it might be a little bit delayed because we'll be very short-staffed. And then events. One of the big events on our radar right now is Drupal South Wellington in New Zealand, beginning of February 14th and 16th. Emma Jane Westby and John Albin Wilkins are two Lullabots who are going to be speaking there. And I think they're working up a workshop as well, but we don't have the info on that yet. Definitely let you know once we get that stuff nailed down. But if you are in that area of the world, or if you want to have an awesome vacation in February, you should check that out. Cool. All right. We'll wrap up the announcement-y stuff and get to the real deal. So, Drew, hi. This is Drew. And I'm going to start things off with what is 24 Ways? What's the elevator pitch?
So, 24 Ways, it's first and foremost, just a personal project that I started back in 2005. And the idea is that from the 1st of December to the 24th of December each year, we publish a new web design or development article every single day. So I usually start off with day one writing something myself, and then I recruit in lots of friends and industry experts and all sorts of people to just share an item each day, usually something they've learned through a project or, you know, that sort of thing. So it's kind of like, yeah, an advent calendar for web geeks. One thing I've learned over the years is like the concept of an advent calendar doesn't necessarily translate all the way around the world. Cause you know, not everyone celebrates Christmas, of course. And in some cultures that, you know, you might not be familiar with an advent calendar. So, you know, we're talking about rather than a big picture with lots of little doors where you peel back a door each day and there's a bit of chocolate or a picture. With our site, you pull back a door each day and there's a brand new article. So that's kind of the idea.
Awesome. So you say it's for web geeks, but like, what are the topics that you actually cover, and does it change year to year?
Honestly, we tend to be quite forward looking in terms of web technology, and we tend to have a bias to the front end of stuff rather than the back end, rather than application code and databases and stuff. Simply because the front end is universal to everybody's web work, whereas as soon as you get into back end stuff, you're segmenting down to small parts of the audience, and you know, as soon as you start talking about PHP, there's a whole load of people who don't use PHP, so it's not relevant to them. So we tend to stick to front end topics, so HTML, CSS, JavaScript, just general design stuff, things like project management, writing content, all those sorts of things that that touch everybody's day to day web projects. And we try to be fairly forward-looking. So we might have an article about some CSS technique that only works in one browser right at the minute. But, you know, because the articles sit there then for 12 months before the next lot come out, then, you know, 11 months down the line, that CSS property might be in wide use, certainly on, you know, more cutting-edge sites. So, you know, we tend to look to the horizon rather than look back or look at current technology as much as possible. So
how did this come to be? Like, why do you do this?
Yeah, why do I do it? So, well, for fun was right the original idea. So I'd seen the I don't know if you're familiar with the Perl advent calendar.
Yeah.
Which, you know, going back years, the Perl community had an advent calendar that they did. I thought at the time I was working a lot in the sort of web standards community. I was formerly group lead for the web standards project, so I was kind of quite entrenched in that web standards community around the time that we were all moving from tables based stuff to CSS based stuff. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was something like this Perl advent calendar for web standards sort of things? And I was thinking, you know, each day might just be like a little tip, like a tiny snippet, like maybe one or two paragraphs of stuff. And so I sent an email out to a bunch of friends and said, hey, I've got this idea. How about we, you know, does anyone want to contribute just, you know, a couple of paragraphs, a little idea of, you know, for each day? And what I got back from those people were full articles, you know, really in-depth, well-researched, or well sort of explained tutorials on using different aspects of web technology. So that kind of like they forced me to up my game, and it became this kind of like a seasonal web magazine, I guess, in a way. So that first year I probably wrote about four or five of the articles myself, because I didn't have that many people on hand to help. But since then, so that was 2005 we started. We've been doing it every year since then. The first year was a big hit, so we thought, well, we'll carry on. And yeah, this is our ninth year of doing it, ninth season.
Wow, yeah, it's been a while. But luckily, web standards have been around for a while, so that's good. So you say we, is it you running this whole show, or is it you plus a certain circle of friends who step in every year, or?
So it started off just me on the production side of things, you know, recruiting all the articles. And then over the years, I've been joined by a small team. So now I have a guy called Brian Suda, who's based in Reykjavik, who helps out with the sort of editorial side of things. got Anna Debenham, who's a really great front end developer, who helps with the actual production of the articles, of getting all the markup in place and all that sort of stuff. A guy called Owen Gregory, who's a really excellent copy editor who proofreads everything. And then this year we've brought on a new designer, Paul Robert Lloyd, who's designed the site for, sort of redesigned the site for us this year. So that's the sort of production team. And then in terms of actually getting the articles written, we have a mixture of sending out, you know, invitations to people who we've seen write interesting stuff or speak at events, or we think we'll have something really good to share. We contact them and see if they'd be interested in writing for us. And also people just email and pitch an idea. So it tends to be a mix of those two things.
So how far in advance do you start prepping it, you know, and so that you can have everything lined up and release it properly and stuff?
We usually start brainstorming our sort of the subjects that we want to make sure that we cover. We usually start that in September. There's a conference that happens. I'm in the UK. There's a conference that happens in Brighton here in the UK called Deconstruct every year, and that's the one time that Brian and myself tend to be in the same location every year. So so we put our heads together at that point and have a chat. About what sort of subjects we want to cover, and we start planning from then. I tend to send invitations and things out in around October, get articles commissioned hopefully by the beginning of November, and then get them in by the end of November is the plan, right? But does it ever happen like that? Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
We tend to be able to stay usually about 7 days ahead of our publication schedule, so I'm, at any one time I've normally got the next week's articles lined up ready to go, but sometimes it gets a bit hairy.
I understand that. We have video content that needs to go out every week, and some weeks it's like, oh my god.
Yeah, well, it's the thing about the schedule that we publish to is, you know, you can't be a day late with an article.
People will notice if you miss a day.
So yeah, they go out at they go out automatically at midnight GMT for each day in December. So yeah, the article's got to be there, ready and waiting. But thankfully, as the years go on, authors are more appreciative of that. They know that's the schedule we're working to, and so we do tend to get stuff in ahead of time. I mean, I think maybe it was the first year that I came back one evening from, I was out at gone out for dinner at a restaurant, came back, it was about 10:30 at night, and I was expecting to have had an article in from an author that I could publish that night, and there was nothing. So I had to then sit down at that point, you know, after a few glasses of wine and dinner,
and
write an article. So, so aww. Yeah, but that hasn't happened for a good few years.
Good. So when you're talking about like focusing on front end and stuff like that, like and looking forward, like so. When you were looking to select, like, what for this year, are you looking to, like, what's the big trend coming in 2014? Like, are you trying to do a little bit of a I spy into the future? Or is it, you know, more like, how do you actually pick this year, these are the topics or articles that we want? Like, when you have that brainstorming session, then how from there do you actually get it done?
Yeah, we look into our crystal ball and think, what on earth? I mean, normally you can see what techniques and things that people are beginning to experiment with. And of course, when people are starting to experiment with stuff right at the beginning, you have buggy browser implementations and that sort of thing. And so then hopefully by the time we're planning to have an article out, those, you know, at least one browser will have stabilized a little bit on whatever it is that we're trying to discuss, and we can find whoever is the expert who knows about that thing and try and get them to write. So there's a, you know, an aspect of sort of crystal ball gazing, but also it's sort of listening to the questions that people are generally asking in the community. You know, what subjects are people struggling with? What do they want to know more about? We actually tweeted out from our 24 Ways Twitter account a couple of months back, asking, you know, what do you wish you had more time to learn about in, you know, the coming year, which I thought was a good way to maybe solicit what people were wanting to focus their time on. And we had loads of people saying, oh, they really wish they understood Git better. And we had loads of people saying, oh, they really wish they understood JavaScript better than just using jQuery. You know, they know jQuery, but they don't feel like they really understand the language JavaScript, and they would like to understand more about that. So this year, because of that, we've got a few different articles about Git, and we've also had a really great sort of in-depth article that gets people started on the road to learning JavaScript properly. How can you throw away your libraries and you know, where do you start to get to grips with that? And it doesn't so much teach, but point you in all the right directions of where you can go and find the information. It's kind of a mixture of looking ourselves, what technology is coming down the road, what are people going to be using within the next 12 months because the browser support will pick up or because trends are taking us that way. And what is it that people are struggling to understand? You know, what are they doing and need to sort of level up their skills on? And also, sometimes we just get pitches from people who say, "Oh, I've been working a lot on this, and it would make a really great article." And we think, "Yeah, that would make a really great article." An example of that this year, I think our third day was. A chap who'd he just sent us an email. What's his name? Charlie Perrins. He sent us an email. He'd worked on the post office website here in the UK, and they had pretty stringent requirements in terms of accessibility. It had to be AAA and all that. And so he'd had to do a whole load of research and learning about how he could make a really usable site. With JavaScript widgets and all these sorts of things that felt like a modern usable website, but also catered to those accessibility requirements. And he managed to sum up, you know, some key points that really help you get your head around how do I do JavaScript and accessibility, and put that together into an article. And that, you know, that's absolutely our sort of thing. If we can, you know, point people in an interesting direction, things they can learn about and things that they can come back and reference when on their next project. That's, you know, that's what we're all about.
Perfect. Yeah, I should also mention that one of the Git articles, and the reason we ended up having Drew on the podcast is because Emma did a Git article, I think, was it the fourth? It's out there. It's published already. I'm not, you know, destroying any surprises or anything. Yeah. So I'm curious with the crystal ball nature. Have you had, you know, ones that you've done and tossed that out there, and then whatever that like tip or technology or whatever just bellied up like immediately, and you were like, oh well, it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few, especially in the earlier days, you know. It is crystal ball gazing, and yeah, sometimes something that you think is going to take off doesn't take off. We had an article in the early days about Adobe Air, how to get started with Adobe Air, and I'm sure that was useful to people, but that's not a technology that we tend to see an awful lot in use anymore. We've had articles about using XSL to style XML, and that was a useful article, but. But I'm not sure who's referencing it in 2013. It can be hit and miss, but you can't provide interesting content without taking a few risks and sometimes missing.
And just even if it's not a direct hit, I think exposing people to different things and different ways, even if that doesn't end up surviving into the thing that people do in the future. Like, I think part of this whole like learning thing is just exposure to, you can think of this another way. So even if they die on the vine, I think there's still usefulness to people thinking about it and learning about it at the start.
We're one of our most popular articles throughout the whole of, you know, throughout the years. And it wasn't a major hit the day it was released. Because, you know, some articles, the headlines really catch on and people tweet them around, and loads of traffic piles in from Reddit, and back in the day stuff would pile in from Dig, and you know, they become obvious massive hits straight away, and others are sort of more slow burners. And one of the slow burners, which is actually now our busiest article on the entire site, is about designing HTML emails. Wow. Because yeah, I mean, who'd have thought it, right? But there's just it's just so the content's just difficult to find out there, you know. And we had an article by Dave Greener, who's one of the founders of Campaign Monitor, and he wrote us a really great article about, you know, your approach to working with HTML that's going to work well in HTML email clients. And yeah, that's one of our most popular articles. And of course, it's quite old. It's from 2009, but the situation hasn't changed. Everyone's still using, you know, bad old email clients.
Exactly. HTML email, ouch.
Well, that's it. That we all think, ouch, and go to Google. How do I do this? And 24 ways comes up. So
nice.
Yeah, that's.
Do you have a favorite article or group of articles?
I'm not sure I have a favorite as such. I guess the ones I really like are the ones where somebody's been working in depth on an issue in a project, and they just come to the article and say, look, you know, we were doing this. This is the problem that we found. We tried all these different things, and this worked out as a really great solution. We discovered this that nobody else had seemed to be discussing. Here's a good solution, and they just share it. Because I think that was kind of the essence of what I hoped for the site, that not that we would be publishing articles that telling people you should work this way or you should work that way or we think we're great. It's just, here's a bit of knowledge that I've gained from my work. Maybe it's useful to you. Here, take it. You know, as like a Christmas gift. The sort of spirit of giving was always what the idea behind an advent calendar is. You know, it's people sharing stuff back to the community, you know, from which they've been taking stuff all year in Google searches and reading blog posts and things on Twitter. So I think they're my favorites.
Yeah. And generally information from in the trenches, you know, people can connect with that and implement that in a different way than, you know, here's a concept, but no, really, this is how we had to get this done somehow. Yeah. So I want to change tack a little bit and just talk a little bit about technology side of stuff. And so you guys are using Perch, which is a CMS, to run the 24 Ways site, which is obvious if people know that you created Perch. And so I'm curious about your experience creating your own CMS and sort of how that came about, and have you worked much with open source CMSs, and what was your decision process to making your own?
So we actually launched the 24 Ways site in 2005 on TextPattern. Don't know if you're familiar with that. PHP-based blogging platform, I guess. It was from a similar era to that WordPress began to emerge. TextPattern, and what was the other one? Movable Type.
Yep.
It was around at the time. I used TextPattern for my own personal blog, and so I just spun up another instance of it and built 24 Ways on that. And we ran on that all the way up until last year. Now, about 4 years ago, so about 2009, my company started developing Perch as just a side project, really. We were a web development agency, and we'd always had our own in-house CMS framework that we used for sort of big client projects. I guess the sort of scale of stuff that you would use Drupal on. You know, just more involved sites, big sites, stuff with e-commerce, membership systems, and all those sorts of things. So we had our own in-house framework for that we developed sort of from the ground up. But then we had clients coming to us saying, oh, we really love, you know, the site that you built for us for, you know, for this end client. But we've got this little thing that, you know, we doesn't need all that. It just needs something simple and something less expensive. You know, have you got a solution for us? And we didn't have a solution. And so we thought, well, let's just kind of mess around a little bit in our free time and see what we can come up with. So I spent about, I guess it was about 3 weekends just coming up with the first version of Perch. And the concept is that it's PHP MySQL based. And the concept is you can take a kind of like a static website and just drop in some basically a PHP function call anywhere where you want an editable region of content. So if you want a, you know, an introductory paragraph or whatever, you can just drop in a function call that says intro paragraph. And the first time you load that page, that then gets created in the admin interface, and you can just go in and start editing content for it. So that's kind of like was the core idea, just minimal content management so that you could just drop in as you needed it without any sort of big setup of, you know, of a heavy system or anything like that. So we started that as a side project, launched it in June 2009. So about, well, I guess coming up to like 4.5 years ago. And it's just sort of grown and grown and grown. And in this last year, we stopped taking on client projects at all, and now we're just a CMS company. So it's kind of all we do.
How is the transition? I'm curious about this from a personal perspective. The transition from basically doing services to product.
It was actually the transition was the interesting bit, because we obviously, as soon as you have a product, you've got to support it. So you have customers who raise tickets and post to the forum and kind of need responses. And that's okay. That's fine. We enjoy doing that. But what we found is at the point we were kind of half client work and half Perch in terms of our sort of business time split. That was the most difficult, because if you're working on a complex client project, you need like solid time, don't you, to get your head down into the code and really concentrate on what you're doing. And then if all the time support tickets are coming in, which are unrelated to what you're working on, but need a fast answer, that's kind of really disruptive. We were as a business, we were a development company, and we kind of, our clients were design agencies who then had the end client. So we were kind of working in this situation where the designers were in one company, we as developers were in another company, and they would kind of throw PSDs over the fence to us, right? Yeah. Which, you know, my wife, Rachel, started the company in 2001, and at that time, that development model worked fine, you know, and worked fine for a good number of years. But, you know, in 2013, I don't think you can build really great websites that way. And we were beginning to feel that, you know, okay, you can get by like that, but we couldn't produce the sort of work that we wanted to. So we needed to change our model of business somehow to get away from that. And all this time, Perch was growing. And so it just kind of seemed the natural thing to transition away from the client stuff and focus more on Perch.
Because Lullabot has always been a services company. And then we started Drupalize Me, which is a video training subscription service. So it's our product. And we started that several years ago, a little over three years ago now. And that transition's been interesting. Lullabot is still a services company, and that's the majority of the business. But the Drupalize Me team has become its own separate team, because trying to keep a foot in both sides is crazy. It's just crazy talk. You need to be focused on the product if you're going to do the product. You know, like, so I'm always curious about people who go through that transition, because it was very much a learning experience for us as a company. And for me as an individual, like, I had been doing consulting largely, you know, for most of my time at Lullabot. And then we started, again, this side project. We'll do this video site thing while we're doing client stuff. And then we finally decided to focus energy, and it was given to me to be my baby. But there was a lot to learn about having a product, and it's really different than having a service. And things like support, and you're like, oh, right. I need to let people know we're off for the holidays and going to try our best to keep up, you know, like, things I didn't have to think about before. But also, I mean, and for me personally, incredibly satisfying. So I love managing a product now.
Yeah, that's what we're finding with it's great to be able to get really stuck into one thing and to be able to manage the process from start to finish, to be able to control, not that we're control freaks, but but to be able to control the whole, you know, process. And of course that can leave us spread a bit thin sometimes in certain areas, and it can involve us having to learn new skills and try and, you know, sort of cover skills that we don't really have, things like marketing, which is, you know, as a developer, that's tricky stuff. But
I hired somebody to do that this year.
But yeah, I think it's really sort of fulfilling to work on that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. How many people are you?
So it's just two of us.
Just
me,
you and Rachel.
Me and Rachel, yeah.
Kudos, man. I know how much work it is.
Yeah, so it's pretty much a 24/7 job, but we love what we do, so that, you know, that's good. You know, we're also available for support on Christmas Day. Yeah, just because, well, we're here, we'll be checking email anyway, so if a customer's got a question, we'll happily answer it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we should probably wrap things up, but... fascinating. I mean, 24 ways, very cool. I'm also really fascinated about the whole product thing and creating a CMS as a project in this day and age and stuff. So maybe at some point we can continue that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would love to. But yeah, do you have any other parting thoughts for our dear listeners?
Only to wish them a very happy Christmas.
And a merry new year.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, maybe I'll see you if I stop by in the UK sometime. I actually would love to go to Deconstruct at some point. So,
yeah,
maybe next year.
You should come along. It's great.
Awesome. All right. Well, listeners of the Drupal land, we're wrapping this up. But as always, if you have questions or comments or thoughts or ideas for new podcasts, let us know. You can always leave a comment on the podcast page, but you can also contact us with our contact form, drupalize.me/contact. Our Twitter account is twitter.com/DrupalizeMe, and same thing with Facebook, facebook.com/DrupalizeMe. So talk to us. We'll talk back, I promise. Thanks. Have a good new year, everybody, and we will talk to you in 2014. See ya.